Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, John from Connect the Dots in Las Vegas.
My name is John Bang. I'm an alcoholic. It's really good to be here. Good to be sober. My sobriety date is September 17, 2006, and my home group is the Connect the Dots group in Las Vegas, Nevada. We have a big speaker meeting on Monday nights at the Salvation Army Worship Center. If anybody's in town, get in touch with me or Bob or whoever. We'll hook you up. I love this group because I've been out here a bunch of times, and it's definitely a pocket of enthusiasm. You walk in, you can feel the energy. My sponsor loves you guys, too, so just a little point out there. But I'm excited to speak tonight. It's always an honor and a privilege to be able to talk on behalf of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just here to share my experience. My experience is, I thought coming to AA was a death sentence. I really did. I mean, I was like, the first time I came to AA, I was probably in my middle 20s, and I went to a bunch of meetings. I grew up down on right by Long Beach Island, New Jersey, and I went to a couple of meetings, and I was just like, man, what is wrong with these people? I'm like, why can't they just get it together? I'm like, and they're all like complaining and this and that. And it was all, first of all, it was all discussion meetings, So, a lot of people going and sharing their problems, And of course, I was like, ooh, I was like, I got a lot of problems, And I can tell you at that young age, I was just not ready, I've seen some young people coming out of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's pretty cool, See like 12, 13 year old people. I'm like, wow. I used to be like, you can't be ready. But I tell you, You don't know what's going on the inside, And this AA is all about an inside job, I don't know how much pain they're feeling on the inside, Because, I mean, what drove me to Alcoholics Anonymous? Pain. Absolute emotional pain, where I couldn't live with it no more the way I was living. And certainly didn't start out like that. I had a pretty good childhood. Like I said, I actually grew up in the town of Manahawkin. It's just right before you go on Long Beach Island. And my family had a business in Long Beach Island, and spent a lot of time on Long Beach Island partying. I grew up in a family. I have an older brother, older sister, and they're both alcoholics. And they're older than I am. I have more time than them. I like to always point that out to them. And I tell you, that's another thing. I mean, I played a very little role in them getting sober. They call me once in a while. I try not to preach to them. I let them have their own little path. They know what I do. They know I'm, AA is, I love AA. It's the center of my life. Looking back, I tell you, my parents, they really should get like a medal or something, because I mean, I didn't realize that we grew up in a house of three active alcoholics. It was insanity, and I thought I came from this really bad, you should have seen what happened in that house, and looking back, really, I mean, we had three active alcoholics that were crazy, my sister is much older than I am, she's, 9 years older than me, and my brother is 4 years older than me, so there was a little bit of an age difference there, I started drinking at a pretty young age. I don't know. I've seen people drink younger. But I drank. The first time I actually felt the effect of alcohol was a fourth grade summer going to fifth grade. But I was that kid that ran around at holidays, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, and there'd be like drinks on the table, and I'd be like, I'd just take a little, a little snuff. I had this perception of alcohol, because I'd kind of pay attention to it. I'd be at the family functions, and I would see people start drinking, and it seemed like alcohol kind of brought people together, It was something that kind of, like, meshed people together. And I was like, there's something to that, And to describe the way I felt before I picked up my first drink, and I think, I believe it's pretty relevant to talk about the way you felt before you first started drinking, because I'm one of those believers that I already had, like, some type of spiritual disconnection going on as a young kid. I really did. If I would have described what was going on in my head, I remember one time I actually did. Now, leading up to the fourth grade was a pivotal year for a guy like me. You know, up to that point, I was a kid that didn't seem to get in a lot of trouble. I kind of skated out of things, you know. But fourth grade was definitely a year that I started to kind of have a lot of conflict. At home, in school, I didn't like people telling me what to do. You know, I hate authority. You know, I was like, who are they to tell? I mean, I was like this big. I looked like Dennis DeMenace, and I would just be like, who are you to tell me what to do? And they'd be like, hey, kid, you're like four, you know, you're in the fourth grade. You're supposed to listen to us. And I remember I wanted every girl in the fourth grade to like me. You know, I was like, oh, God, man, I love that girl. You know, Jill, she's so hot. And now I couldn't even say one word to her. Because when you live it up in your head, I mean, I was just all about living up my head. I couldn't tell you what was going on or how I was feeling or anything like that. But I tell you, man, I love this girl, Jill. I was like, ooh, Jill. You know, and I remember this guy, Steve, starts talking. And I'm like, you know, he's like smooth, suave. He was like, you know, I was like, you know, and I'm just like this kid that was so, I told my first sponsor I was shy. He goes, you know what shy is, John? I go, what is it? He goes, just massively consumed in self. I'm like, oh. It is. I mean, because I was always thinking, how is it going to affect John? You know, is it going to play out the way I want? Am I going to get what I want? If I'm not going to do what I want, I'm going to do this. I mean, just all these things are going on. And, yeah, just kind of insanity, really. I couldn't ask Jill out. So my idea of asking girls out was I run up and hit them. So I ran up and hit this girl, you know, and my teacher, Mr. T, comes up. And now we're probably in a bunch, about 30 kids in our class. And, public humiliation is the worst thing, you know, public humiliation. And I remember he pulled me out in front of the class, and he was like, John, it's like, that's not what we do. He's like, that's not as wrong. And I was just like, whew. I'm sitting there going like, what's this guy think he's doing? You know, I got to do something to get back at him. So I remember I was at the right height, and I just leaned over, and I was like, boom, you know where. And I get expelled in the fourth grade. I remember getting expelled, and I'm in the principal's office, and he called me by my last name, which I couldn't stand. He called me Banning, and I was like Banning. I like flipped over the desk, and they started sending me to like psychiatrists and all these people, and they're like, John, what are you thinking and feeling? And I'd be like, they're beating me at home. I'm like, I'm lying. I'm like totally lying. I'm telling them all this stuff. My brother and sister beating me on my mat. My dad's whipping me with belts. And they're like, oh, my God. You know, and I tell you, I learned something very valuable. That because I got honest with them. I told them some of the feelings were real, how I felt on the inside. And she was just like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I said to myself, I'm never going to get honest about the way I feel again, ever. I'm not telling you how I feel. Because I thought they were making fun of me. I thought they were judging me, you know? All the stuff that I thought that was, like, pretending going on, actually, I thought it was really going on. I thought, it's real. I'm not making this up. They really are judging me. They do think I'm a psychopath. So I'm not going to get honest, you know? And that's how I really, for a long, 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 long time, I was not going to let you know how the way I felt. No way, you know? And, you know, it's kind of funny you coming out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and one of the biggest things there is, I must be entirely honest with another human being if I'm living long and happy in this world, you know? Honesty is probably the most indispensable principle there is in this universe, you know? And I'm not an honest guy. You know, I did not, you know, it's kind of funny you run into people, you know, who aren't alcoholics and they've practiced principles all their lives, you know? It seems very natural to them. You know, and I tell them, I'm 5.5 years sober. I'm practicing principles. They're like, ooh, you know, like, I've been practicing principles for 36 years. You know, I'm like, oh. You know, but see, I didn't like, you know, I was taught right and wrong. I was taught principles as a kid, but I didn't continue to practice them. I wasn't going to be honest with you, you know. I would do things that I was ashamed of, and I would just lie about it because I don't want, you know, I feel like you're going to judge me or I'm going to get in trouble. And you know, that summer, I remember I took 2 bottles of Rhea Needy wine. Now, I actually picked out what I was going to drink, all right? Because we had a big liquor cabinet at our house, big one, big, big liquor cabinet. We had beer, wine, all sorts of hard liquor, you know, and I was like, hard stuff. You got to stay away from that, you know. It just seemed dangerous. And I had tasted some hard stuff, you know, some in a eggnog at Christmas. My grandmother used to put 100-proof old granddad in that stuff. And I remember tasting it, I was like, whoa! I was like, whew, I didn't like it. So I can't say I never drank for the taste of alcohol, because the first time I really drank and had the effect that I was looking for, it was wine. And it was peach green tea wine. The reason why, I remember one night my mom was drinking, and she was like, she's drinking. My mom's not an alcoholic, and she was like, green tea on ice is so nice. And I was like, ah. I remember I tasted it. I was like, whoa. I'm like, that's pretty good. It was sweet, you know, it went down smooth. And I was like, I'll take 2 bottles of that. And I remember I'm like this big, and I stuff them down my pants, and I'm going to the movies, and I show up at the movies, and I'm there, and my mom pulls away. Now, to this day, I still don't know how my mom did not see 2 bottles of wine down my pants. I was like, what were you on, Mom, you know? And I remember my mom pulls away, and I'm like, bam! And everyone's like, wow, Johnny's got wine. And I look out of the corner of my eye, and there's my brother. I'm like, uh-oh. My brother comes up to me. He's like, boom, bumps into me. He's like, you're going to give me a bottle. I'm going to get a what out of you. And I'm like, okay. And I pass the bottle off. But I tell you, what I found, and this is, you know, I'm looking back on my life. You know what I mean? When I first came to AA, I didn't even think I was an alcoholic when I came to AA. I'm ready to raise my hand and say I was all sorts of things, you know. But looking back on my drinking, I am definitely an alcoholic. You know, and I remember I got this bottle of wine. I'm not even drinking it yet. And alcohol is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Alcohol was a power greater than me, you know, because all of a sudden these people start coming around me. You know, I'm feeling a part of. I'm like, yeah. You know, my brother's friends are like, what's up, Johnny? You know, who doesn't want their older brother to like them and his friends? You know, I remember I started hitting that bottle down. I get about half of that bottle down. Whew, something happened. You know, I mean, I started doing some weird things. I remember at one point, I was like, my brother's over there, and my brother's girlfriend's over here, and I was like, Debbie! I'm like, you know you want a younger guy. You know, my brother was just like, come here, you know. But that's not something I really would normally do sober, like, seriously. I mean, like, I would never have to do that, and I start drinking and something weird happens. I got this strange relationship with alcohol. I have an allergy to alcohol. You know, I start drinking and I don't really know what's going to happen. You know, it's like kind of playing like Russian roulette. You know, and I was very, very confused for a long, long time. Long, long time. You know, because I was one of those believers that, you know, I thought if you could just separate me from all the things I'm doing and you gave me the right outside circumstances, my life would be just great. You know, and that's not the case. It's not the case. I said in the beginning, you know, this is an inside job. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous is not treating drinking or drug problems. So, you know, I mean, seriously, I mean, there's a lot of people that think that, you know, and it's really not, you know. It is about identification. It is about, you know, do I have the allergy? You know, if I take a couple of drinks, can I safely predict the outcome? You know, and on an honest, honest level, and this is about some self-honesty. You know, I worked with a lot of guys that come in who did a ton of drugs. Me too, you know. But when I look back on my drinking, absolutely, if I put a couple of drinks in me, I cannot predict what's going to happen. Something, it set something off inside of me, man. I would just be like, and I've been around some normal drinkers since I've been sober. And I watch them very intently. I'm like, what's going on here? You know? And I watch them. You know, they start drinking and they're milking it. I'm like, I always drank fast. I did. Always drank fast. You know, once I got it going, I was like, yeah. You know? Not realizing that I'm already in the grips of the phenomenon of craving. You know, I'm like, I'm in the grips of the phenomenon of craving, you know? But I'm watching these normal drinkers drink, and it's a sedative. They're having a couple of drinks. They put it down. And I'm like, you're not going to have no more? They're like, no. I'm starting to feel the effect. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, that's the best part. It's like going up this huge, huge roller coaster. And you just get to the top. And you're like, and it's like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, what's going to be on the other side? You know, and the normal drinker just stops. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm like, yeah. That confused me for a long time. You know, and like I said, you know, what drove me in Alcoholics Anonymous was absolutely emotional pain, hopelessness. Circumstances make us willing. You know, well, what kind of circumstances are going to have no guy like me to become willing to do anything different? A lot. Some people, it's not that much, but some people, it's a lot. You know, some people come in here with a lot of stuff still. And that's, you know, that doesn't make me any less of an alcoholic than they are. You know what I mean? We have the allergy, the spiritual malady, the obsession of the mind. You know, but I'm just one of those hardheads. I really am. I'm a hardhead, and I had a lot of good times drinking. I really thought for the longest time I never had a good time drinking. And I had a lot of good times drinking. Drinking was like, I had a lot better times doing the drink than the drugs, really. You know, drinking, man, I was just like, I can tell you a couple stories. I'm going to tell you one of them because it's just my favorite story. And it kind of describes me and how I drink and kind of like how I live my life. I like excitement. I like to live like, you know, let's get it going. You know what I mean? That's how I like to do AA, too. You know, I'm one of those guys. I'm like front lines guy. I'm like, I'm at the home group. I'm like, what's going on? You know, like shaking everybody's hand. I want to know who you are, where you're from, what state. Who knows where you're from? You know, new guys see me. They're like, I'm like, get out. Because, I mean, I'm a little too excited, you know. They're like, this guy's going to make me do stuff. But that first night I drank, I remember I drank that bottle, about half of the bottle of wine, and I didn't realize what happened was that I did kick in that craving. You know, I drank the whole bottle of wine. That's a lot of wine for a little kid that, you know, like that big with straight bowl cut hair, you know. I really did look like Dennis the Menace, and I acted like him too. You know, and I wound up face down on the beach throwing up all over myself. You know, I tell you what I remember the next day. I didn't remember the humiliating stuff. What I remember was me having that bottle, me taking a couple slugs, and me feeling really like a part of, you know, like a freedom, like, woo, yeah, you know. And I mean, isn't that what I was looking for my whole entire life? Peace, freedom from the bondage of self. Didn't know that. And that's what alcohol did for me that night. You know, alcohol became a viable solution for me. You know, and a couple of things that plagued me too was that I never became physically addicted to alcohol. I never drank every day. I never had to drink in the morning. None of those things made me alcohol. None of them. Now, they're characteristics of, you know, some people go that far. You know, later stages of alcoholism, most people are homeless and drinking as much as they can, you know, for a little bit of money. That's a later stage, and they usually live on the streets. You know, I see a lot of them in Las Vegas, believe me, you know. And it's a sad, sad thing. But, you know, and I didn't, like, I did kind of chase that effect for a long time. I did, you know, because I just, what I had kind of supplanted in my mind was, like, you know, all I remember was, like, having that bottle of wine and start taking a couple of slugs, and all of a sudden, like, people were, like, paying attention to me, and I felt like, you know, I was like, yeah. And that's the memory I had supplanted in my head. And that's what I was chasing for a long, long time. And it wasn't like that when I was 32, 33 years old, living in abandoned houses. You know, that's not what I was getting anymore. You know, like I said, I had a lot of good times drinking. And, you know, I kind of gradually worked my way up. You know, I didn't like drinking wine no more. You know, wine filled you up and made you sick. You know, I was looking for better buzz. I was always the guy looking for the better buzz. You know, and first time I was 15 years old, and I went to a party at Stockton State College. Now, at this time, Stockton State College was a big, big party school in New Jersey, right by Atlantic City. And my brother was going there. I was like, this is a good deal, man, you know, 15 years old. Now, let me tell you, up to this point now, my life, I thought I was like this really nice kid. Nah, I really wasn't, you know. I was in trouble with the law at a young age. I was a kid that was like seriously urinating public and public intoxication, assaults, eluding police. I had like a really, really big juvenile record, but I just didn't pay any attention to it. Yeah. So, I mean, I really, I didn't think that rules applied to a guy like me. You know? I mean, seriously. When I got sober and my sponsor told me I had to pay taxes, I was like, what? Really? He's like, yeah, you got to pay the IRS back, too. I was like, that sucks, man. But I just didn't think rules applied to a guy like me, you know, and I came from a family that, you know, my parents were always, they love me so much. They love me so much, they almost killed me. You know, I mean, they just kept, because they kept on helping and helping and helping and helping and helping. That's all they know. You know, I tell parents, hey, I'm like, stop, just stop helping them. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, stop. No money, no nothing. Just let them fall. They're like, oh, God. And it's a hard, hard thing to do, to watch a loved one just fall flat on their face. You know, but it's kind of what's necessary to make us become willing to do something different. You know, 15 years old, I'm at this college party, and I showed up there, and they had this big punch bowl, you know. And I was like, ooh, what's in the punch bowl? And they had, like, fruit and then a big ladle. And they're like, keep little Banning away from there. And I was like, as soon as they said that, I mean, I'm going towards it. I mean, anybody told me to, like, don't do that, like, I'm doing it. Just to prove them wrong. And I remember, like, they weren't looking, and I started laying that stuff in. I find out that there's Everclear in it. And I'm like, wow! I mean, I was lit up. I remember I drank so much of that stuff. I stole my brother's keys, and I'm like driving around the college. And he had a stink bug, and I was like, I was just like, yeah, like this is the best. I mean, 15 years old, I had like no structure, no accountability, no nothing in my life. I was doing what I was self will run riot. I did whatever I wanted. And my parents were so tired, they just like sleep was alone, you know. And I was like, what is this stuff? Because I want to get a bottle of it. And the guy showed me. Now, it's amazing when you want something. I had a photographic memory. You know, I was like, I know what that bottle looks like, and I'm going to get my hands on one. Now, it's hard to get a bottle of anything when you look like a guy like me. I mean, I didn't even shave in high school. You know, I mean, I looked like, when I graduated high school, I looked like about 14. So, I'm not getting nothing unless I can steal from my parents or get somebody else to get it. But I caught my sister doing something with her boyfriend. And I was like, that's going to cost you. I'm like, you tell Jimmy, leave it in the woods. So I remember I get the bottle, and I come running back to the house, and I'm like, yeah. And I think you can just drink right out of the bottle. My brother's there. He's like, whoa, whoa. He's like, you can't do that. I was like, well, what do I do, Bill? He's like, get 2 milk jugs, clean them out. He's like, and get some Kool-Aid. Now, my brother screwed me, because the right mixture is not a half bottle and a half bottle with Kool-Aid, and it's warm. And I'm double-fisted, and there's a big party going on out in the woods. I live right on the edge of the Pine Barrens, you know, and I love being in the woods, man. I'm sure you guys like the woods? Yeah, you know what I mean? I love being in the woods, starting fires and, like, quadding and mudding and, like, rah! You know, because in the woods, I could do whatever I wanted. And they're having this big party out there, and they're going to camp out there, and they had quads out there. And I was like, I couldn't wait to get out there. And I start drinking this stuff, man. I mean, it's pretty gross. It tastes like rubbing alcohol. But once I get going, it don't matter, you know. And I get going. I get out there. And my friends, I was 16 years old. And this is the first, looking back on my drinking, this is the first time that I definitely had a sense that the way I drank was different than a lot of my friends. Because I get out there, you know, and I'm like, I mean, I'm crazy. I'm like, ah. And they're like, whoa, what's going on with you? And they're drinking like Mike's Hard Lemonades and bottles and James and like Girls Light. I mean, Coors Light. no offense, I'm sorry. I'll drink anything, believe me. But I remember, I'm like, you guys want some of this? And they taste it. They're like, ugh. They're like, why would you drink something like that? I'm like, it's high test. High test. And they're like, ugh. And I'm like spilling it. I'm like, ah. Like, you don't want it? And then they're like, something's wrong with you. And I remember they're complaining. They're like, oh, there's so many pine trees out here. And I'm like, there's a lot of pine trees in the Pine Barrens. And I'm like, that's right. There's a lot of pine trees. And And I remember thinking to myself, I'll show these guys. And I was always one of those guys that was doing stuff crazy because I wanted people to think I was crazy. I really did. You know, I would just do like crazy things and they'd be like, "Whoa, John's crazy." You know, and I like that label for some reason. And this night they're all out there and they're complaining they can't put their tents up. There's too many trees. And all of a sudden a bright idea comes into my head. And I'm telling you, alcohol is the only substance, I'm telling you. And I've done a lot of substances. Alcohol is the only substance. When I get an idea, I'll put it into motion. You know what I mean? I will have the you-know-what, let's carry this out, you know? And I remember, I was like, boom, my dad just got a brand new steel chainsaw. And I was like, ha! And I remember I ran back to my garage, and I'm back in the garage, and I can't imagine this scene. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, just drunk on my you-know-what, and I'm like throwing stuff around. I got this chainsaw, and I fire it up, and I'm like, and I run back to the woods, and they had a big campfire going, and I'm like, oh, well, look at this. You know, I'm like, whoo, you know. And they look at me, and they see me, and they're like, John? And I had this little laugh, and I was like, ha. And I just, they're like, what do you got, John? I'm like, I'll show you what I got. And I fired up this chainsaw. And I remember, I'm like, wow, wow. I'm like mowing trees down. People are flying everywhere. And I'm like, yeah. I'm in people's tents. And they're like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, let's move it out. And the next day I woke up and I get a phone call. And they're like, did you know what you did last night? And I was like, had something to do with a chainsaw. And I went out to the woods and I cut down about 30 trees. That's the way I drank, with excitement. You know, those were the good times. You know, and I wish they all could have stayed like that. And there were very little consequences. I mean, if I did something like that today, man, I'd be in big trouble. It's all National Wildlife Refuge. I mean, and I had little consequences, like small consequences. You know, up to that point. You know, and if I could sum up my alcoholism, it was like at a certain age, probably about 19 years old, 18, 19 years old, where I made a conscious decision where I'm like, you know what, screw you to my mom and dad. Screw you to anybody I think that knows better than me. And I started to make a series of poor decisions. You know what I mean? That's a good idea. I love when new guys tell me, what do you think? That's a good idea? I'm like, no. I'm like, that's a stupid idea, you know, but I just don't see it. I think it's a good idea. It's my idea, you know, and all this is going back to that 60 to 63, you know. I'm making decisions based on self, which later puts me in a position to be harmed, you know. Isn't that the story of my life, you know? I'm in fear, self-centered fear. I'm trying to get something. I'm muscling my way in there, you know. I'm going to exert my will, you know. I'm going to get what I want. You know, and next thing you know, it's not turning out the way I think it's going to happen, and I'm actually being, I feel like I'm the victim. Like, well, look what happened here. Look what they're doing to me. You know, now I don't see what I've done before. I don't see that. You know, that's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need an inventory. That's why I need to stay in the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm never finished. Never finished. Some people think they're finished. I'm not. I've been very reluctant to do a lot of inventory, but I tell you, it is the path of least resistance. Let me tell you. It doesn't seem like it. Let's do some inventory, John. No. Every time my sponsor says that, I'm like, why? He's like, I sense some your angst. I'm like, he just knows, you know. He knows I got to get something off my chest, you know. He usually has some resentments or fear, you know. And it's a good thing to inventory. But, you know, 16 years old, like I said, I had some good times. And, you know, I went to Southern Regional High School. And I was a good athlete, good soccer player. And I actually was good enough to, you know, I had schools looking at me all over the place. You know, my parents actually moved to Lake Tahoe because of me. I think they were trying to get the hell away from me, but, you know. But actually, there was a school out there that was, like, trying. They wanted me to come out there and play soccer and ski for them. And, of course, you know, that's not going to happen. Believe me. You know, I am not a dedicated student. You know what I mean? Like, I am not the guy that, like, sits down and studies and, like, tries to, like, do well in school. You know, I didn't seem to have that in me. You know, you know, and like I said, my parents moved away when I was 19 years old. And I was kind of mad at them. You know, I was like, and now I realize, I mean, I don't know if they're trying to get away from me and my brother and sister, but, like, they moved away. And, you know, I didn't have, like, a couple of things I didn't have in my life that I have today in my life is that I wasn't accountable to nobody. I did whatever the hell I wanted, you know. I'm not answering to nobody. You know, don't you know who I am? Seriously. You know, and I was always involved in legal activity and, you know, I thought I was above the law and I just thought I could do whatever I wanted. And, you know, I started to make a series of poor decisions. And I actually went to college for about a little over a year. And they finally said, listen, you don't go to class. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I show up at the games. They're like, no, like, we're not paying your tuition for you to come to games. I'm like, oh, I thought that's what was going on here. They're like, no. And they're like, why are you in school? And I was like, party and get laid. They're like, get out. They're like, you're out, you know. And I was like, all right, whatever, you know. And I came up with a bright idea. My brother was working down in Atlantic City. And he's like, dude, become a crafts dealer. I'm like, of course. I'm like, I'm a natural Atlantic City guy, you know. And I go down to Atlantic City, and I'm destined to be the best crafts dealer ever in Atlantic City. I'm like, this is going to be me. And I go down there, and I actually put a lot of effort into it. I was a good crafts dealer. You know, I was a real good crafts dealer up to the day I got into a bookie for about $40,000. Had a little bit of a gambling problem. First 12-step program I ever went to was GA. I went there, and I was like, they actually court ordered me to go, and I go there. And I'm like, what is wrong with you people? This one guy was like, I was a millionaire, and now I'm eating out of dumpsters. I'm like, well, come on. You know, stop gambling. You know, I don't know. It's not that simple. You know, I didn't even realize at this point that my life is already starting to spiral out of control. You know, I don't even know it, that I'm headed for a disaster. You know, and at 19 years old, I go down there, I start working. By 22, I'm being indicted on 63 counts of felony fraud. You know, I got in that boogie for $40,000. Well, I got to pay him back somehow. So, I borrowed some money from my parents off their credit. Good son, right? You know? And I'm standing before a Superior Court judge in New Jersey, and I stole $100,000 from my parents. And he's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, what are you, you know, I'm thinking to myself, like, why is this guy, like, pressuring me? You know? Like, seriously. You know, and I don't even realize that, like, I'm really not a good guy, and I'm making terrible decisions, and I'm trying to defend my decisions. And, you know, I was on probation from the age of 22 all the way till 33 years old in one shape, way, or form, you know. And I started to go in and out of jails, you know. And I actually did get, at one point, kind of got my life together. And this really screwed me up, too, you know. It's not good when an alcoholic seems to get their life together. You know, it's terrible because it really is, because, like, inevitably there's a worse relapse coming. It is going to be a disaster. And that's what it was. You know, I was 22. I go on probation. I finally get fired from Atlantic City, which saved my life probably, you know, terrible environment for a guy like me. Go figure. I live in Las Vegas now, right? You know, but I'm like, I got to get my life together. And my friend starts a landscaping company, him and his brother. It's just me, him, and his brother. And we started from scratch, man. We were handing out flyers on Long Beach Island. Today, this guy, multimillionaire, him and his brother. You know, not me, but I helped start the business. I did. And I was always an energetic guy. I was always a go-getter. You know what I mean? I was always like, yeah, motivated to do stuff. And I helped build this business, you know. And I went a stretch of years where I really did try to keep it together. But looking back, I remember my idea sober was like, I'm just smoking pot, you know, or I'm taking pills, or I'm doing steroids, or, you know, I mean, like, never just free of everything. Whoa, that's a new concept, you know. Abstinence? from all stuff, I was like, oh, man. But I was always medicated in some way, shape, or form, you know, and it's not good for a guy like me, you know. I like being in that state. And, you know, I kind of built my life up. I had a nice little life going. I had a house. I had all sorts of stuff. I was making lots of money. You know, but inevitably I had a really, really big collapse, you know. And by age 27, I went from having all this stuff, being a guy that was respected in our community. You know, I knew all the cops. I did all their work for them. To being a guy, you know, people like turn their heads. You know, they're like, "What happened to him? What's wrong with him?" You know, and the guilt and the shame started to build. You know, and I'm telling you, I started to do things I never thought I would do. I love when people say, "I would never do that." Oh yeah, oh yeah, because I never thought I would do some of the things I did. You know, I never thought I would come home one day and I'm so strung out that, you know, I go over to my brother's house. My brother's not home. My sister-in-law is not home, but my nieces and nephews are home. And I pushed those little kids out of the way to steal all their money. Because I had this obsession on me so hard. And I needed some type of relief. You know what that's like. You just can't get it off you. You're like, oh, you know, I need something. I was a relief junkie. That's what I was. You know, I'm not looking for relief in Alcoholics Anonymous. Absolutely not. I am looking for freedom. I'm looking for peace. That's what the steps, I believe, offers. Not just relief. Freedom. Peace. You know, and I went in there and I stole their money. I remember I'm down at the Commerce Bank and I'm dumping it in there. And my little niece calls me up and she's like, "Uncle Johnny, I forgive you." And I'm like, I was so messed up I couldn't even cry. I can cry today. I can cry today because I know I've done the right things. I made amends. I made it right with them, you know. But and did some horrible things, and you know, I couldn't even look people in the eyes. Couldn't. I just wanted to hide, you know. I was one of those like vampires that came out at night only because I didn't want you to see me, you know. I went from being a kid that was like 185 pounds, a really good athlete, to like, when I went to jail last time, I was 152 pounds, really malnutrition. You know, and I went and I got locked up age 33 on some serious felony charges. You know, and I was in and out of the Superior Court system in New Jersey, man. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I kept on seeing the same judge, Judge Daniels, man. I see this guy, and he would just be like, "You again?" And I would just be like, "I don't know, you know?" And he'd be like, "When are you going to get your life together? Look how old you are. You're a menace to society." You know, and I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, aren't you being a little harsh? I mean, looking at my record, I'm charged with like over 70 felonies, six on my record now. You know, I guess I am a menace to society. They should lock me up, you know, and that's what they wanted to do. They really wanted to lock a guy like me up. And I'm telling you, anybody that's had any that's done any work inside at the jails or prisons or any kind of stuff, once you get in there and you get hooked in the system, it's so hard to get out. You get this mentality. You know what I mean? You just can't break down that wall, you know? And it's hard. And I'm standing before this judge and, real quick, actually how I got locked up, I got picked up I was still trying to work. I don't know how I was really working, but I was trying to work, and they picked me up, and I did a serious, serious detox in jail. It was horrible. I mean, I had fluids coming from every direction, you know. They put me in medical. I was in there. I couldn't eat, couldn't do nothing, you know. And I thought, I just thought I was going to die, you know. And I love, you know, when Clancy says they hid in a friendly direction, you know, because that's when I finally got to that point where no one wanted to help me no more. Where else is it to look? I started looking up. You know, I was like, what am I going to do? You know, my parents hung up the phone. The last phone call I had with my family when I was in there, I remember I called my mom, and my little niece gets on the phone again. And she's like, "Uncle Johnny," she's like, "you're a sick person." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "They're not going to bail me out." You know, I'm like, "They're not. What do you mean they're not going to help me?" And they said, "We're not taking your phone calls no more." And they wouldn't take my phone calls no more. You know, and that drove me, like, almost insane. You know, I was just like, oh, I was like, they're not going to help me. And I started to accept it. They weren't going to help me. You know, and I was probably the best condition I could ever be in. I was really, really desperate. I was hopeless. God was moving me in a direction I never thought I'd be moving. You know, because when you have nothing left to fight for, then I'm movable. You know? If I still have stuff left to fight for, I had nothing left to fight for. I had nothing. And it wasn't on the outside stuff. It was the inside. I had nothing left. I was destroyed. And I remember I got in that gym. One day I was like, what am I going to do? I got on my knees and I said a prayer. And I said a prayer to a guy that I didn't think it would work. I just did it because I was desperate. I was like, what else am I going to do? I went to church as a little boy. I went to Lutheran church. I knew I was going to hell. They told me, you're going to hell. You know, if you think it, you did it. I was like, oh my God, I've done everything. And I said that prayer, and 2 weeks later, I get bailed out of jail. Come on now. You know, I'm thinking, wow, I deserve this, you know. Not thinking that God's already putting the players in my life, you know. And I get bailed out, and I go to this halfway house in Lakewood, and I'm like, you know, I'm in Lakewood now. If you've ever been in Lakewood, I felt a little out of place there, you know. But I'm in Lakewood, and it was just like crazy. And I'm going to meetings. They're like, you got to go to meetings. Go to AA meetings. I'm like, I'm not even an alcoholic. I'm like, why am I at an AA meeting? They're like, just go to meetings. I'm like, okay. You know, so I'm going to lots and lots and lots of meetings. And I'm saying I'm everything. You know, I'm alcoholic and all this stuff. You know, I remember one day I said I was like four different things. People were like, okay, whoa. Like, let's slow it down. How many programs are you in? And I'm like, I'm a complex guy. And you don't understand me. And I'm crazy. And they're like, you're nuts. You know, and I learned some valuable lessons. I learned valuable lessons. I was living in that halfway house, and a lot of my outside things seemed to get better. You know, I was holding jobs. When I went back out, I was making like 18 bucks an hour. My parents were talking to me again. They were like, oh, Johnny, great job, Johnny. Woo. Now, meanwhile, on the inside, I had no sponsor. Sponsorless. No home group. Just going to meetings. Lots of meetings. Now, I don't put down going to lots of meetings. I think it's important that you go to meetings. But I didn't do anything out of the big book. I had no change. I had no psychic change. I had no awakening of my spirit. I was like a zombie walking around. I was like, I'm like, you know, just fighting it off one day at a time. Like, I'm going to go out any minute. I don't know when it's going to be, but it's going to happen. And it did happen. You know, I had to go to the dentist, you know. And 9 months, I go back out, come back. I topped it out for 30 days at my brother's house. I white knuckled it. And I come back to this halfway house. And I'm at this halfway house. And I know, inevitably, I'm going back out again. I know it. It's only a matter of time, you know. And I go to this speaker meeting. And I ran into Jim. And he's up there. He's like, he's like, talk. I'm like, look at this guy. Come on, man. Like, really? I'm sitting way in the back. I got like a hood over my head. And I'm like, this guy is, how's he that happy? What's he on? You know, and I was gonna set him straight after the meeting. And what happened was I go up to him and I asked him for help. And he pulls me aside and he starts talking to me. He's really excited. I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? Why are you getting so excited? And he's like, he calls people over and he's like, they're all talking to me like, hey, why don't you come up Sunday night to Chatham? And I'm like, where the hell's Chatham at? You know, and I'm like, are you willing to go to any lengths? I'm like, I don't know. And I'm like, and I start going crazy. I'm like, what's going on here? Am I joining a cult? Like, yeah. I remember I called my parents one time. I go, I think I joined a cult. And they're like, that, whatever. It's working, you know? And what happened slowly over a period of time was that this sponsor guy did something that no one else could do. You know, I believe that he drank the same way I did, thought the same way I did, had the same feelings, all that kind of stuff. And really what I believe morally was that we felt and thought the same way sober. that he was insane sober. I'm like, I understand. I'm insane. And this guy got me to take actions that I thought were stupid. He got me to do things that not probation officers, judges, girlfriends, anybody could get a guy like me to do. And that's why I'm a big supporter of sponsorship. You know what I mean? Because really, when you really break down Alcoholics Anonymous, it's just that one alcoholic sharing with an alcoholic. Get them to lower that sense of difference. You know? I believe in you, so do what I do. You know? And I started doing what this guy was doing. And he started having me, you know, he's like, why don't you get in the morning and get on your knees and pray and ask God for help today? And I'm like, okay. He's like, read 2 pages. That's all you can handle. I was like, 2 pages, okay. He's like, then call me. I call him. He's like, then go look for a job. You should probably get a job. I'm like, okay. You know, and I'm living at this halfway house, and I remember at one point he's like, just move up here. And I'm like, I don't know. I got a complex life down here. He's like, just move up here. I'm like, okay. And I'm like, all right. I move up there, and I'm like, I got my own room. I'm in an Oxford house at this point. And I'm like, I move up there, and there's like 13 people living in this house. I'm like, where's my bed? They're like, on the floor. I'm like, oh, this blows, you know? But I tell you, what happened was I started to have to develop a home group. You know, I had a home group ethic. You know, I really loved my home group. I wanted to be a part of. I made sure that I was early. I was greeting people. Like, you know, I took a position in my home group. I started to go through these steps. I did a fourth and fifth step. I got honest with this guy. You know, I talked about all the shameful things. I was just, oh, God, look at me. You know, he would share some of the stuff, and I'd be like, dude, what's wrong with you? You know, I'm like, but he would share some crazy stuff, and I'd be like, oh, man, I got to let this one thing out. You know, I got to let it out. I got to share it, you know, because it's eating me up, you know? You know that one thing just eats you up? And I shared it with a man, and he was just like, that's it? Really? I said, come on, man. Get over it. And he just kept me in action, kept me moving, you know, and had me start making amends, you know. And I tell you one thing that he really instilled in me at a young, early age in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's like, you need to work with new people. He's like, you're a sick person, sick person. He's like, you need to work with people right away. I'm like, right away? He's like, they don't want what I got. He's like, they know that. Who cares? Just try and help them. And I'm like, and I did. I started sponsoring people at a very early age in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, and I took a lot of bad heat for it, too. You know, and I don't care. Even out in Las Vegas, I pushed my guys. Once you've done a fifth step, get out there, man. You start helping people. That's the name of the game, baby. You know what I mean? I learned more about myself in trying to help people than any single inventory I've ever done. I mean, I've learned some good stuff in inventory, but let me tell you something. I am a selfish, self-centered jerk. And if I don't learn how to get out of that, which is, I need to be selfless. I need to help people. And it especially says I need to help drunks. You know? But just help people. And the sponsor I have today, he's the same way, man. I tell you, I watch my sponsor. This guy's feet, he's moving. I can't keep up with this guy. He's at the detox. He's there. He's doing this. He's doing a fist. I'm like, oh, trying to keep up with him, you know? But today, my life has changed immensely. You know, I'm a little over 5.5 years sober. I moved to Las Vegas. I've created a good life, you know, through action, you know. And absolutely what today I really believe is I believe and I trust in God. I do. I love God, man. I know God's got my back, no matter what I'm going to go through. That's all I got to share. Thank you.